Idaho, stretched out on his cot with his eyes closed, heard a weight drop onto the other cot. He sat up into the mid-afternoon light, which slanted through the room's single window at a sharp angle, reflecting off the white-tiled floor onto the light yellow walls. Siona, he saw, had come in and stretched herself on her cot. She already was reading one of the books she carried around with her in a green fabric pack. Why books? He wondered. He swung his feet to the floor and glanced around the room. How could this high-ceilinged, spacious box be considered even remotely Fremen? A wide table desk of some dark brown local plastic separated the two cots. There were two doors. One led directly outside across a garden. The other admitted them to a luxurious bath, whose pale blue tiles glistened under a broad skylight. The bath contained, among its many functional services, a sunken tub and a shower, each at least 2 meters square. The door to this sybaritic space remained open, and Idaho could hear water running out of the tub. Siona appeared oddly fond of bathing in an excess of water. Stilgar, Idaho's Naib of the ancient days on Dune, would have looked on that room with scorn.
Shameful, he would have said. Decadent, weak.
Stilgar would have used many scornful words about this entire village, which dared to compare itself with a true Fremen siege. Paper rustled as Siona turned a page. She lay with her head propped on two pillows, a thin white robe covering her body. The robe still revealed clinging wetness from her bath. Idaho shook his head. What was it on those pages which held her interest this way? She had been reading and rereading since their arrival at Tuono. The volumes were thin but numerous, bearing only numbers on their black bindings. Idaho had seen a number 9. Swinging his feet to the floor, he stood and went to the window. There was an old man out there at a distance, digging in flowers. The garden was protected by buildings on 3 sides. The flowers bore large blossoms, red on the outside, but when they unfolded, white in the center. The old man's uncovered gray hair was a kind of blossom, waving among the floral white and jeweled buds. Idaho smelled moldering leaves and freshly turned dirt against a background of pungent floral perfume.
A Fremen tending flowers in the open!
Siona volunteered nothing about her strange reading matter.
She's taunting me, Idaho thought. She wants me to ask.
He tried not to think about Hui. Rage threatened to engulf him when he did. He remembered the Fremen word for that intense emotion. Kanawa, the iron ring of jealousy.
Where is Hui? What is she doing at this moment?
The door from the garden opened without a knock, and Tayshar, an aide to Garun, entered. Tayshar had a dead-colored face full of dark wrinkles. His eyes were sunken, with pale yellow around the pupils. Tayshar wore a brown robe. He had hair like old grass that had been left out to rot. He seemed unnecessarily ugly, like a dark and elemental spirit. Tayshar closed the door and stood there looking at them. Siona's voice came from behind Idaho.
Well, what is it?
Idaho noticed then that Tayshar seemed strangely excited, vibrating with it.
The God Emperor...
Tayshar cleared his throat and began again.
The God Emperor will come to Tuono.
Siona sat upright on the bed, folding her white robe over her knees. Idaho glanced back at her, then once more to Tayshar.
He will be wed here in Tuono, Tayshar said. It will be done in the ancient Fremen way. The God Emperor and his bride will be guests of Tuono.
Full in the grip of Kanawa, Idaho glared at him, fist clenched. Tayshar bobbed his head briefly, turned and let himself out, shutting the door hard.
"Let me read you something, Duncan," Siona said.
Idaho was a moment understanding her words. Fist still clenched at his sides, he turned and looked at her. Siona sat on the edge of her cot, a book in her lap. She took his attention as agreement.
"Some believe," she read, "that you must compromise integrity with a certain amount of dirty work before you can put genius to work. They say the compromise begins when you come out of the Sanctus intending to realize your ideals. Meneo says my solution is to stay within the Sanctus, sending others to do my dirty work."
She looked up at Idaho.
"The God Emperor, his own words."
Slowly, Idaho relaxed his fists. He knew he needed this distraction, and it interested him that Siona had emerged from her silence.
"What is that book?" he asked.
Briefly, she told him how she and her companions had stolen the Citadel charts and the copies of Leto's journals.
"Of course you knew about that," she said. "My father has made it plain that spies betrayed our aid."
He saw the tears latent in her eyes.
"9 of you killed by the wolves?"
She nodded.
"You're a lousy commander," he said.
She bristled, but before she could speak, he asked,
"Who translated them for you?" "This is from Ix. They say the guild found the key."
"We already knew our god emperor indulged in expedients," Idaho said. "Is that all he has to say?"
"Read it for yourself."
She rummaged in her pack beside the cot and came up with the first volume of the translation, which she tossed across to his cot. As Idaho returned to the cot, she demanded,
"What do you mean I'm a lousy commander?"
"Wasting 9 of your friends that way."
"You fool."
She shook her head.
"You obviously never saw those wolves."
He picked up the book and found it heavy, realizing then that it had been printed on crystal paper.
"You should have armed yourselves against the wolves," he said, opening the volume.
"What arms? Any arms we could get would have been useless."
"Laser guns?"
he asked, turning a page.
"Touch a laser gun on Arrakis, and the worm knows it."
He turned another page.
"Your friends got laser guns eventually.
And look what it got them."
Idaho read a line, then,
"Poisons were available."
She swallowed convulsively. Idaho looked at her.
"You did poison the wolves, after all, didn't you?"
Her voice was almost a whisper.
"Yes."
"Then why didn't you do that in advance?" he asked.
"We didn't know we could."
"But you didn't test it," Idaho said.
He turned back to the open volume.
"A lousy commander."
"He's so devious," Siona said.
Idaho read a passage in the volume before returning his attention to Siona.
"That hardly describes him. Have you read all of this?"
"Every word. Some of them several times."
Idaho looked at the open page and read aloud,
"I have created what I intended, a powerful spiritual tension throughout my empire. Few sensed the strength of it. With what energies did I create this condition? I am not that strong. The only power I possess is the control of individual prosperity. That is the sum of all the things I do. Then why do people seek my presence for other reasons? What could lead them to certain death in the futile attempt to reach my presence? Do they want to be saints? Do they think that thus they gain the vision of God?"
"He's the ultimate cynic," Siona said,
tears apparent in her voice.
"How did he test you?" Idaho asked.
He showed me his golden path."
"That's convenient. It's real enough, Duncan."
She looked up at him, her eyes glistening with unshed tears.
"But if it was ever a reason for our god, Emperor, it is not reason for what he has become."
Idaho inhaled deeply, then,
"The Atreides come to this."
"The worm must go," Siona said.
"I wonder when he's arriving," Idaho said.
"Karun's little rat friend didn't say."
"We must ask," Idaho said.
"We have no weapons," Siona said.
"Nayla has a laser gun," he said. "We have knives, rope. I saw rope in one of Garun's storage rooms."
"Against the worm?" she asked. "Even if we could get Nayla's laser gun, you know it won't touch him."
"But is his cart proof against it?" Idaho asked.
"I don't trust Nayla," Siona said.
"Doesn't she obey you?"
"Yes, but..."
"We will proceed one step at a time," Idaho said. "Ask Nayla if she would use her laser gun against the worm's cart."
"And if she refuses?"
"Kill her."
Siona stood, tossing her book aside.
"How will the worm come to Tuono?" Idaho asked. "He's too big and heavy for an ordinary thopter."
"Karun will tell us," she said. "But I think he will come as he usually travels."
She looked up at the ceiling which concealed the Sarir's perimeter wall.
"I think he will come on peregrination with his entire crew. He will come along the royal road and drop down to here on suspensers."
She looked at Idaho.
"What of Garun?"
"A strange man," Idaho said. "He wants most desperately to be a real Fremen. He knows he is not anything like what they were in my day."
"What were they like in your day, Duncan?"
"They had a saying which describes it," Idaho said. "You should never be in the company of anyone with whom you would not want to die."
"Did you say this to Garun?" she asked.
"Yes."
"And his response?"
"He said I was the only such person he had ever met."
"Karun may be wiser than any of us," she said.
"You think power may be the most unstable of all human achievements? Then what of the apparent exceptions to this inherent instability? Some families endure. Very powerful religious bureaucracies have been known to endure.
consider the relationship between faith and power. Are they mutually exclusive when each depends upon the other? The Bene Gesserit have been reasonably secure within the loyal walls of faith for thousands of years. But where has their power gone?
The stolen journals. Mineo spoke in a petulant tone.
Lord, I wish you had given me more time.
He stood outside the citadel in the short shadows of noon. Leto lay directly in front of him on the imperial cart, its bubble hood retracted. He had been touring the environs with Hui Nori, who occupied a newly installed seat within the bubble cover's perimeter and just beside Leto's face. Hui appeared merely curious about all the bustle which was beginning to increase around them.
How calm she is, Mineo thought.
He repressed an involuntary shudder at what he had learned of her from Malki. The God Emperor was right. Hui was exactly what she appeared to be, an ultimately sweet and sensible human being.
Would she really have mated with me? Mineo wondered.
Distractions drew his attention away from her. While Leto had toured Hui around the citadel on the suspensor-borne cart, a great troop of courtiers and fishbeakers had been assembled here, all the courtiers in celebration finery, brilliant reds and golds dominant.